Good evening, everyone. This is Dr. Nalini. Welcome to our Grand Rounds call. It's the first call of the new year, January 2019. It's really fun for me to see everybody logging on. We have people from all over the country, and we even have Stephanie from Singapore. Welcome, Stephanie. So this call will be about an hour and 15 minutes. And I will start by teaching a clinical pearl on an advanced topic. And then we'll move into case studies and questions. And I always have a few research papers, recently published papers that I like to bring to your attention. All of you are muted at this time. If you want to ask a question at any time, you can just press *7. Or if you're logged into the web, you can type into the chat box. And I will take breaks between every section of this call and give you an opportunity to ask your questions all throughout the call. So we'll begin now. We took a break last month, so it's been 2 months since we've done this. I really miss this. This is my favorite part of the whole course for myself. So what I want to do tonight is I get so many questions on how to manage the side effects of cancer treatments. And so I want to start tonight by talking about managing the side effects of platinum chemotherapy drugs. And make sure you got a reminder email earlier today that had two documents in it. There's a PDF of the slides for this clinical pearl that will also be uploaded to the Grand Rounds Call section of our website. And you should have also gotten a PDF of the case we're going to review tonight if you want to follow along on the slides or the case notes. And then if you don't happen to have access to that right now, or you didn't download it ahead of time, it will be uploaded to the Grand Rounds resource section where you'll see the clinical pearls and you'll see the case, the call summaries, so you can see the kinds of cases that we have reviewed. And we're in the process of organizing the case studies now so that if you're looking for a breast cancer treatment plan or a prostate cancer or lymphoma, you can see the different cases we reviewed and then have kind of some things to study from on your own. So let me just charge ahead. The reason that I chose the platinum drugs is, number one, they're so widely used. And number two, they have so many side effects. And number three, we can do so much to really mitigate the short-term and long-term effects, adverse effects of these drugs. And it's really important. It's one of the most valuable things we can do. And I'll just tell you a little story before I jump into the clinical part of this training. And that is, I have a lot of ovarian cancer patients, and there's a really wonderful ovarian cancer oncologist here at UCLA that I actually partner with on a lot of patients. He's very open. He's very collaborative, and he's a researcher. He's very forward-thinking. He's very interested and supportive of my work because he sees that patients do so much better when they have a health plan as well as a disease plan, which is what our model and our mission is, to introduce to oncologists the experience that patients do so much better. And so with platinum drugs, which are widely used in ovarian cancer, a lot of patients never finish their course of chemotherapy treatment because of the toxicities. Either their kidneys become compromised and the platinum drugs have to be stopped. Some people actually have permanent kidney damage from platinum drugs. A lot of people get elevations in their liver enzymes and have to stop due to hepatotoxicity. Some people have such debilitating diarrhea or neurotoxicity in peripheral neuropathy that treatment has to be stopped. And some people become so myelosuppressed that treatment has to be stopped. So this oncologist, before he administers his chemotherapy, will go through a list of all the side effects. His nurse will go through a list of all the side effects and ask the patient before another course of chemotherapy is administered to them which side effects they're having. And a lot of my patients go, no, 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 no. And it just blows his mind. So I just want to emphasize what we can do is huge, not small, but huge. So we can mitigate adverse effects during treatment, which means we're really protecting all those tissues and organs. And we can also, if someone comes to us post-treatment, we can then help repair some of that damage also. So I'm calling this Managing the Side Effects of Platinum Chemotherapy Drugs Part 1, because as I started to put this lecture together, I realized there was probably an hour or two of content. So I'm going to go through some of the adverse effects, and then I'll do a Part 2 and a Part 3 if we need it. So what I'm going to talk about tonight is the impact of oxidative stress, nephrotoxicity, neurotoxicity, myelosuppression, hepatotoxicity, and hypomagnesia from these drugs. And I'll give you my interventions, and then you'll have a bigger toolbox and a better understanding of what you can do. Now, the common platinum drugs are cisplatin, carboplatin, and oxaliplatin. And they're prescribed in a very wide range of cancers, but their use is very limited due to toxic side effects and adverse events, for which oncologists have no toolbox, but we do. The side effects often cause either cessation of chemotherapy treatment or drastic reductions in drug frequency or drug dosing. And so that, of course, impacts whether or not a patient can successfully have a full course of treatment. And one of the studies I looked at made the statement that cancer patients can experience any combination of up to 40 specific side effects from this group of drugs, and that it's very important to monitor these patients and their chemistry. So I'll bring that to your attention as we go through each group of side effects, what you might be monitoring and measuring them to look at the toxic effects. And remember that we all have different, you know, nucleotide polymorphisms and different genomics that causes us to metabolize drugs differently and causes us to clear drugs more or less efficiently. So people can be quite different. So the mechanism of action of these drugs, they fall into a class of chemotherapy agents called alkylating agents, and that is primarily because they form adducts to the DNA, which means they'll bind to the DNA and deform it, essentially, so that it's no longer a functional protein. And so it just really disables a lot of the software in the cell. Also, these drugs are super, super pro-oxidant, very inflammatory. They do promote cell cycle arrest, and they will promote both apoptosis and necrosis in cells. And so that's true of tumor cells and healthy cells. And just remember, tumor cells are different animals than healthy cells. So we leverage the fact that they're more vulnerable and that tumor cell suffers more than the healthy cell. But the healthy cells still, of course, suffer, and that's why we have toxic side effects. So the primary damage and the reason for most of the effects is the damage to the DNA, very high levels of oxidative stress, and very high levels of inflammation in these drugs. So one of the parts of the neurotoxicity is ototoxicity. I actually have a little boy with a neuroblastoma patient who wears hearing aids now because he lost most of his hearing from platinum drugs. Although I'm only going to do a handful of adverse effects tonight, there's also cardiotoxicity, which I'll talk about at another time. Mitotoxicity, meaning toxicity to the mitochondria, gastrointestinal toxicity, increase in thrombosis and hypercoagulation, tremendous fatigue, often contributing to or exacerbating cachexia. And then most patients will also experience alopecia, hair loss. So a lot goes on with these drugs, but that's why they're so powerful. They do a lot. So I want to just say a few things about oxidative stress sort of in general, because we use a lot of antioxidants in our treatment plans anyway, and we encourage people to eat foods that are full of pigments, which are all have antioxidant activity. And what I really want to bring to your attention is, number one, these drugs have super high oxidative stress induced in cells. And I have a paper that was just published in February of 2018 showing that antioxidants, in fact, do not interfere with chemotherapy. And this is always an argument with oncologists. And this is a great paper, 174 peer-reviewed original articles from 1967 to 2017, comprising 93 clinical trials with a cumulative number of over 18,000 subjects, showed antioxidants do not interfere with chemotherapy. Antioxidants mitigate the toxicities induced by chemotherapeutic agents. The therapeutic efficiency of chemotherapy increases in the presence of antioxidants, not doesn't decrease, increases, and that antioxidants are seen to also increase survival time for patients who receive these pro-oxidative therapies. So that refutes what oncologists and radiologists often say, is that if there's a pro-oxidative treatment, you can't have any antioxidants, but that in fact is not true. And this is a really good comprehensive study. I've also included a reference to an article that was published in the 2016 March issue of Integrative Cancer Therapies, which is a wonderful peer-reviewed journal on integrative cancer care. The title of that is Efficacy and Interaction of Antioxidant Supplements as Adjuvant Therapy in Cancer Treatment, a Systematic Review. So that's also a review article that really came to the same conclusions. But these are good studies to put in front of oncologists and radiologists to argue. And quite often they will state that and say that to the patient. And then I often just ignore it and educate the patient and carry on with what we're doing, because it's very hard to, you know, really convince an oncologist or radiologist that antioxidants aren't problematic, because it makes sense when you think about it, unless you see research like this. I did put in one study here, a randomized controlled trial on vitamin E and cisplatin. This was a phase three study looking at neuropathy, which is a big adverse effect of these drugs. And the study only used 400 units of vitamin E, and I'll usually use a minimum of 400 to 800 units for, you know, looking at what kind of antioxidant we can put in and exert an effect. This was 108 randomized patients. Half of them received some vitamin E and the other half didn't. And this study concluded that the group that received the vitamin E had a dramatically less neurotoxicity and peripheral neuropathy. So there's a lot of studies on the adverse effects of the platinum drugs. Not so many human studies. There's a lot of murine studies, really a lot. So it's hard to find human studies. But nevertheless, all of these things that I'm sharing with you tonight, I actually do in my practice. So let's look at myelosuppression, hematologic toxicity, which is so common with so many different chemotherapy agents. So you can extrapolate this to other chemotherapy agents that have these same adverse effects. So I've given you a slide that shows what my toolbox is for myelosuppression. And you can, again, use this with a wide range of chemotherapy agents. Carboplatin is the most myelosuppressive of the platinum drugs. Always, you're going to monitor the CBC and differential to evaluate myelosuppression. Acupuncture and moxibustion, which is a heat therapy where instead of a needle, you heat up a point or you heat up the needle that's in the point. And there's a lot of studies on acupuncture point Su San Li, stomach 36. You can do that every single day, or teach the patient how to do acupressure or heat with a little incense stick, holding it above the skin and warming up the point. And this, I've given you a reference showing that doing this will actually increase neutrophils, leukocytes, and natural killer cells. And so it's really amazing that you can do that with acupuncture or just heat on a point. But it's very effective for the neutropenic, leukopenic patient. One of the best Chinese herbs with lots of studies for white cells is astragalus or huang qi, and I'll give about 3 grams a day. And if you do that and do acupuncture, these patients maintain reasonable levels of white blood cells and neutrophils, and severe neutropenia is a limiting factor with a lot of chemotherapy agents. So that's a simple thing to do. I find I prefer to use the liquid extracts. They tend to be more stable, maintain their potency, and then it's not one more pill you have to give a patient. I like the Herb Farm and Heron herbs, Golden Lotus herbs, Wise Woman Herbals. Those are all super high quality companies with, medicinal grade botanical extracts. There is also a wonderful formula that was developed in China and is produced in the States by a company called Health Concerns, and it's called Marrow Plus. I know a lot of people here use that, and it's a wonderful formula. It was developed in modern Chinese oncology clinics for myelosuppression due to chemotherapy. You can give all the things I've mentioned so far concurrently with chemotherapy. And I'll give 3 tabs 3 times a day. There's also a formula developed by Donnie Yance called InnuCare 1, which is similar and designed for the same purpose. And these tend to also have Chinese medicinal mushrooms in them, which are also very immune stimulating as well, and also good for inflammation and exhaustion. So you get a lot of other benefits when you use these sort of tonic, blood-building, qi-building types of herbs, but they're modern Chinese formulas. For the patients who have their platelets crash, you want to, of course, be monitoring them for bruising and not anticoagulate them with too much curcumin or omega-3 fatty acids. But these patients can really be helped with melatonin. 20 milligrams of melatonin at bedtime will actually support platelets and the recovery of the bone marrow to produce platelets. And I've seen that happen pretty fast, like within a week. There's also a botanical American herb called Ceanothus americanus, common name red root, and you can give about 3 grams of that a day. I also give that in liquid extract form. And neither astragalus nor Ceanothus americanus have strong taste, so you can just have them mix it into soup or ginger tea or throw it in a shake, something like that. And then for red blood cell anemia, the Marrow Plus and the ImmuCare 1 also address that. So the Marrow Plus and ImmuCare 1 are really great formulas. Patients undergoing chemotherapy and suffering from myelosuppression, and also during the post-chemotherapy time where they're still recovering, their bone marrow is still recovering, then you can continue that and continue acupuncture. And there's also a traditional formula called Sichuan Dabu Tang, which I have the spelling on the slide for you. It's a very famous Chinese formula used in cancer, but it's got a lot of blood building and restorative herbs in it as well. So I often use that as part of the treatment plan. And then I have a slide for you with references for the things I've just talked about. I also have a slide for you showing you that polysaccharide-rich botanicals pretty much all have hematopoietic effects and really help to support and the bone marrow function and help it to recover. You know, you'll have some patients that their bone marrow's like almost been ablated by too much chemotherapy. And there are instances where I'll just say to the oncologist, wait, we need to leave some functional bone marrow for this patient. We're expecting them to survive the cancer. Now they need to have a functional bone marrow. So some patients are left with very poor bone marrow function. So we have to sometimes speak up and say, whoa, wait a minute. So you'll see on this list, on the right-hand side are all Chinese medicinal mushrooms, tremella, grifolia, ganoderma, cordyceps, coriolis. And on the left are some other herbs that you might not realize are rich in polysaccharides, like rhodiola, which is a great adaptogen, danquai, Angelica sinensis, lycium, which is goji berry, astragalus, which we just mentioned, polygonum multiflorum, Hoshawu, and Epimedium, I can't remember the Chinese name of that, But these herbs are all tonic herbs, right? And they're nourishing and they're adaptogenic. And so they also build blood. And so often we have these herbs in our supportive tonics for the exhaustion and fatigue and stress that goes with cancer and cancer treatment. So it's not too hard to support the bone marrow. Then we want to look at nephrotoxicity, which is one of the worst side effects of these drugs and actually can permanently damage the nephron. And so if we can preserve kidney function, it's really important. One of the worst side effects in the function of the nephron is these platinum drugs cause the nephron to leak magnesium, and these patients become hypomagnesic. And sometimes you can get an oncologist to do an IV of magnesium for these patients post-treatment to replete their magnesium. But I usually give oral magnesium glycinate at 300 milligrams three times a day, about a gram of magnesium glycinate a day. Remember that this is your more absorbable form of magnesium that actually builds up tissue stores. When you want to use magnesium for constipation, you want a form that's not very absorbable so that you get that osmotic pressure into the gut and the water comes into the gut and softens the stool. So magnesium oxide, which is like a little rock, it's barely absorbable, or that's the best form, or even magnesium citrate, which tends to stay more in the gut, will hold the water in the gut and soften the stool. So when you're trying to raise tissue levels and make magnesium more available to mitochondria, then you want to use the glycinate form. And there's quite a number of studies there, but there is a reference article written by three amazing naturopathic oncologists called Identifying and Treating Magnesium Deficiency in Cancer Patients Receiving Platinum-Based Chemotherapy. It's a great article by naturopathic oncologists. And then I have a couple of other studies from 2017 on how magnesium actually will attenuate the cisplatin-induced nephrotoxicity. Magnesium will normalize the renal transporters, and so then you won't spill out all the magnesium. And there's also, you know, a number of other drugs. Some of the immunosuppressive drugs that transplant patients are given, like Everolimus, also cause magnesium leaking. So we need to monitor patients. I always do red blood cell magnesium to monitor and then be mindful of the signs and symptoms of magnesium deficiency, which there's a beautiful list of in that naturopathic article I just mentioned. Also milk thistle. There's a lot of studies on milk thistle and adverse effects of chemotherapy agents. So you're going to hear me talk about milk thistle and silibinin and silymarin, which are the phytochemicals in milk thistle, in the context of nephrotoxicity, cardiotoxicity, hepatotoxicity, and neurotoxicity. So because these drugs have all those side effects, because the insult is oxidative stress primarily, then think of using milk thistle with a high percentage of these active phytochemicals in patients. And a lot of people think milk thistle, because it does liver detox, also interferes with drug activity. And I'm cautious if I'm not sure, if I don't have a study, but there's a lot of studies show that giving milk thistle concurrently with platinum drugs actually does not interfere with the action of the drug and dramatically protects these organs. So I usually give it concurrently, and especially on the day of the infusion. And so I have several research articles speaking to the use of silibinin, silymarin, and milk thistle to manage nephrotoxicity with platinum drugs. There's also some studies on L-carnitine, which I'll use about a gram two or three times a day, same dose for the milk thistle. And remember that we put carnitine in our therapeutic shakes to prevent sarcopenia and to prevent the fatigue that goes on with mitochondrial toxicity. And so this is why the carnitine works, is because it keeps the mitochondria functional. N-acetylcysteine is also very good for all these toxicities I just mentioned because it increases glutathione. Therefore, it helps quench oxidative stress. It happens to be a sulfur-rich amino acid also, so it will also enhance detoxification, the phase two detoxification in the liver and the sulfation cycle. But one of its greatest gifts is that it increases glutathione. And then I've given you some reference articles for that and some more on silymarin. So the N-acetylcysteine I'll give 500 to 1,000 milligrams two to four times a day, actually, also. So if you're concerned that milk thistle or N-acetylcysteine might have drug activity interference, change the metabolism or excretion of the drug, then just withhold it for days 1 through 4 or 5, which are the days most drugs are active after an infusion, and then you can add it until they have their next infusion if you're not sure about drug interactions. But remember, there are now patients who are on like oral daily chemo, like Xeloda, capecitabine, or some of the newer drugs. So you have to always take that into account when you're using something that also has detoxification activity. There's also, I put in the notes for this call, a reference article on royal jelly, and it was published in 2018, and its title is Anti-Cancer and Protective Effects of Royal Jelly for Therapy-Induced Toxicities in Malignancies. It's a great article. You can get royal jelly as kind of a paste, a thick paste, and I've used that for coating the mouth and the tongue for mucositis, but you can also get it in capsules, which you could do for the, you know, nephrotoxic, hepatotoxic effects. And it is shown to preserve normal renal function and reduce fibrosis in the renal pelvis, which is really important. It reduces oxidative stress and maintains normal levels of creatinine and urea and uric acid. So that's really fantastic. So I gave you a couple of research articles specifically on royal jelly and nephrotoxicity, but also this broader article on its use in managing a wider range of toxic effects. And think about melatonin also as a super antioxidant. It is very protective to the neurons. I have always thought of it as a neuroantioxidant, but there's a study here showing that it protects the high oxidative stress in the kidneys as well during the treatment with platinum drugs. And so if you're watching kidney function, you're going to monitor the serum BUN and potassium, blood urea nitrogen, potassium, creatinine, and the glomerular filtration rate to watch kidney function. And remember that more elderly patients already have a less efficient filtration rate. So you have to, you know, see where their baseline was beforehand. All right. So, and of course, fluids, you want to make sure they're hydrated so they keep peeing and diluting their urine. Neurotoxicity also, almost every platinum recipient has neurotoxicity and complains of peripheral neuropathy of some kind. Some people experience it in their face and their tongue. Most people have it in their fingers and their toes. A lot of people don't know that they're experiencing neurotoxicity and peripheral neuropathy because they just feel numb. They don't feel pain. So you have to educate patients what to pay attention to and what to report to you, and or to, you know, just do your intake and go down the checklist of symptoms so you know what's going on with the patient. So I've given you a slide of kind of all the things that I think about with neurotoxicity. So always use acupuncture. It's really helpful in repairing nerves. Acetyl-L-carnitine is one of the best things to use for both peripheral as well as central neurotoxicity. Great for chemo brain as well. L-glutamine is great for nerve repair as well. The acetyl-L-carnitine, 1 gram 2 or 3 times a day. The L-glutamine, higher doses, like 5 grams 2 or 3 times a day. The omega-3 fatty acids, of course, to repair the cell membrane, but also because of the myelin sheath in nerves, about 4 grams a day total, preferably the triglyceride form.
We mentioned melatonin previously due to it being a neuro antioxidant, 10 to 20 milligrams at bedtime. Benfotiamine is a very active form of thiamine, vitamin B1, 100 milligrams, two or three times a day. Remember, it's water-soluble. And, of course, B12 is important in neuropathies. You want to use the methylcobalamin form. And I use about a gram, not a gram, a milligram or two of that a day, sublingual. Lipoic acid is well known for treating diabetic neuropathy. It is also helpful in repair. I haven't found it so great in prevention. Liposomal glutathione, but remember you can use N-acetylcysteine to produce glutathione as well. But if you want to use glutathione, the liposomal is great. And actually, if somebody has their tongue is numb, I'll have them hold the liposomal glutathione in their mouth. A lot of what happens with these therapies is you just sort of break the redox cycle so that you can quench all the oxidative stress and free radicals. And so it can often happen very fast. Some of you probably have heard me talk about a breast cancer patient of mine that came to me many years after she had successful breast cancer treatment with terrible neuropathy. And we treated her in 10 weeks. We got rid of all of her neuropathic symptoms, neurotoxic symptoms and neuropathy. And that was quite remarkable with the protocol, like I have here on this slide, and lots of acupuncture. I have some reference articles for you on the neuroprotective effect of glutathione and acetyl-L-carnitine and also N-acetylcysteine. And glutamine. So I have reference articles for all those things that I use. And I pretty much put them all together. And a lot of those things can be in powder, in shakes. And so it can be easy to get them into people. And you start to get relief. So then patients will continue to do that. Now, with hepatotoxicity, you're going to monitor the liver enzymes. And that would include AST, ALT, and GGT, the transaminases, as well as alkaline phosphatase. And, you also want to see if there's any other symptoms, if people are particularly nauseous or if they're getting constipated. That could be from liver congestion also. So you want to, be aware of all the symptoms, but you're going to see it in the liver enzymes, but that actually happens quite late. So I want to encourage you just to assume there's hepatotoxicity, even if you don't see those liver enzymes. But if a patient comes to you already with elevated liver enzymes, you can ask the oncologist for an extra week until they administer the next infusion and then give them a lot of these supplements and try to get their liver enzymes down and their liver inflammation down. You can even do IV glutathione on patients with super high liver function tests and really save their liver. So glutathione is very effective. I've given you a really cool slide on silymarin, which is one of my favorite herbs. Most of you know I'm prejudiced towards botanicals. And the slide's kind of small in the handout, but you can blow it up. And it really gives you this beautiful overview of how powerful this phytochemical from milk thistle is. Influences a lot of inflammatory cytokines, promotes normal apoptosis in tumor cells, will reduce drug resistance by affecting some of the drug transporter genes like P-glycoprotein. One of the best things it does is decrease fibrosis. That's why it's good for the nephron, which becomes fibrotic and then dysfunctional in the face of high oxidative stress. And then, of course, the silymarin itself is a free radical scavenger. Also has an impact on improving insulin sensitivity and also actually has an impact on the HMG-CoA reductase, which influences cholesterol production and has an influence on the secretion of bile. So it is absolutely one of my favorite Western herbs, and I use it quite a lot. You can think of other, you know, fibrotic conditions, like if people have a lot of adhesions, even people with Dupuytren's contractures, it affects some of the genes that are active in those profibrotic syndromes. All right, so that's my pitch on silymarin. With hepatotoxicity, I always think of silymarin from milk thistle and N-acetylcysteine. Always think of those. And the N-acetylcysteine we've spoken about as being a precursor to glutathione. It does have some anti-inflammatory impact in reducing TNF-alpha and IL-6, pro-inflammatory cytokines. It's antioxidant because it's a precursor to glutathione. And it will, you will actually see liver enzymes go down. They use both milk thistle and N-acetylcysteine in emergency rooms today for liver toxicity. So it's recognized that both of these are recognized as good tools to rescue the liver from toxicity. And I've given you some references there on N-acetylcysteine and silymarin. And then also this same paper spoke about hepatotoxicity and royal jelly being able to lower ALT concentrations, being able to protect liver cells from destruction by apoptosis, having some antioxidant activity in the liver, and increasing the expression of superoxide dismutase catalase and glutathione peroxidase in the liver. So that comes from that same paper that I mentioned, anti-cancer protective effects of royal jelly. So that's my quick how to think about some of the main side effects in the use of platinum drugs. So I'll take a little break here. And if you want to ask a question, you can either put it in the chat box or press *7 and ask it. So I'll just pause for a moment to see if you have any questions. Hello?
Hi, it's Warren Ross. How are you?
Hi, Warren.
I have been trying to come to these meetings forever.
Well, here you are.
I know. Thank you so much. I so much enjoy what you're doing. I looked up at Herb Farm, and the potency of the, for instance, the astragalus is relatively low, so I don't know how you get the dose of astragalus you were suggesting from, for instance, an Herb Farm.
Well, you have to give, you know, like a tablespoon of the extract.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
You have to give a lot, okay. Not drops, you know, but you have to give a lot. Yeah. So I might give a teaspoon three times a day, you know, something like that.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. Okay. How do I unlock myself? Do I hit star again?
I think you hit *6 to be quiet.
Okay, I'll try to be quiet.
Okay. Anybody else? Nope. Okay, I'll charge ahead. So we had a case submitted, a breast cancer case submitted. Let me pull that up. And you guys also have a handout on it. So I'll give you a summary overview, and then we'll just go through my thinking on the treatment plan. So this was submitted by Dr. Monica Sood. It's a breast cancer case. Overview, this is a 44-year-old Indian American woman. And I am not sure if that means Native American or of Indian origin. She's 142 pounds. At the age of 44, she's already insulin resistant. She's ER positive, PR positive, and HER2-new positive. She has metastasis to her left femur. She's had some surgical fixation to stabilize her femur, and she's also had local radiotherapy. She has had a left breast mastectomy, and she's had chemotherapy with paclitaxel, and she has suffered peripheral neuropathy from that. She's also had a salpingo-oophorectomy. Because she is young and has estrogen receptor positive cancer, that's a way to reduce estrogen exposure and means less drugs and you don't have to take tamoxifen. But she is also osteopenic in her right hip at the age of 44. So that concerns me. And so, since she is postmenopausal due to her oophorectomy, she is on letrozole, an aromatase inhibitor. Later in the case, I think also she has joint pain from that, as I recall. She's also on trastuzumab and pertuzumab, which are monoclonal antibody drugs for the HER2-new receptor. And she's on Xgeva due to the loss of bone density. That's denosumab, a monoclonal antibody that binds to the RANK ligand and helps deliver to and preserve the stores of minerals in the bone. She's on Lexapro, so she's stressed and depressed. But the good news is she was diagnosed in June of 2018, and her recent PET scan is normal with no evidence of disease. So that's really fantastic. However, she has an elevated CRP of 5.17. That worries me. Her vitamin D is 60, which is within my goal range. I like vitamin D, 25-OH vitamin D, to be like 55 to 80. But given her bone health, I would really like it to be higher. And we also want to make sure she has enough bone minerals so that she's repleting those minerals so that the Xgeva will work. And so we want to think of all the cofactors like vitamin D that would help us to stabilize her bones and try to improve some of her bone density. At this time, her tumor markers are normal. She's had acupuncture, she's a meditator, she prays, and she works with a dietitian. So all good. So the questions that came with this case are how to prevent a recurrence, and then if she's unable to tolerate the letrozole due to joint pain, is there an alternative? So let me answer that first. So number one, we did a clinical pearl on that topic, on the side effects of aromatase inhibitors. And so there's a small slide deck and a audio recording on this topic. So you can search for that if you want to listen to it and see those slides. But the mild aromatase inhibitors that we can use are chrysin, which is a bioflavonoid, resveratrol, and urtica arens, which is nettle root, stinging nettle root. And but they're mild, you know, they give you 20 to 30% impact over a drug, if that, right, depending on the quality of your botanicals and phytochemicals. So some people end up taking a smaller dose or taking the aromatase inhibitor every other day or just switching to another one because there's lots of choices. And so some people just do better on one than another. So you can sort of see if there's any wiggle room to get the benefit of it. I always think with a younger woman, even though she's had her ovaries out, that, you know, we typically have more aggressive cancers. You know, she already has bone mets. So let's do what we can to starve out the receptors on any microscopic cells. So, you know, I always encourage women to give it a try for at least 2 years and see if they can, we can manage them. Also remember that having higher levels of vitamin D up closer to 80 often relieve joint pain. And most women who have joint pain from aromatase inhibitors all feel better if they move and stretch more, because what happens is you have estrogen receptors in your connective tissue and you just get less elastic. I mean, when you're menopausal, you're less flexible for that same reason. So you have to move more and stretch more to remain flexible and with a lot of range of motion. So sometimes a little vitamin D and more stretching are all that's needed. So I encourage people to find a way to stay on those for at least 2 years to get the benefit of them. When we think about supporting bone health in these women, because she has metastasis, there is a very famous Chinese formula called Restore the Right Formula, which is a kidney yang tonic. It's called Yoguitang, and that's Y-O-U-G-U-I-T-A-N-G, classic formula. I often take that, and then I'll mix extra Soralia, Peonia alba, Fructus cornei, Epimedium into that and make a stronger bone formula. All of those botanicals in that formula have studies, And that's a really nice way to support the bone. Also, curcumin, which is in all of our treatment plans pretty much, has a good positive impact on the bone. And also, there's a great bone formula by Designs for Health that I really like called OsteoBen. You'll give 2 BID. And that is bone minerals plus cofactors plus some genistein, which is an isoflavone from soy, which preferentially binds to the estrogen receptor in the bone and the brain and not in the tissue. So it's pretty safe. And it's also, genistein is also an aromatase inhibitor. So I don't have any qualms about using a soy phytochemical whatsoever. But the other thing about this bone formula is that it's copper-free. A lot of bone health formulas have copper in them. So because we want to restrict copper in our patients, this is an option for a bone formula. So I like it a lot. But remember also weight bearing and resistance exercise are crucial. You can take all the herbs and minerals in the world. If you're sedentary, you're going to lose bone mass. So our physiology is designed to be weight bearing and have stress and gravity acting upon the bones. So if she can't do a lot on her feet because of her hips, she could do bands and isometrics and standing things. So a good physical therapist could teach her things to do if she can't exercise normally. Remember, yoga is a weight-bearing exercise. Tai Chi is a weight-bearing exercise. These kinds of things can be modified for people with hip issues. But at her age, she needs to maintain muscle tone and muscle mass as well as bone mass. So exercise is crucial for a patient like this. I noticed in the case description, she's a bit depressed and very stressed. She has young children. And so we need to help her have a lifestyle that counters depression as well. So exercise is really good for that. And we know in breast cancer patients that studies show that only 30 minutes of moderate exercise a day dramatically change prognosis and outcomes. So I would work with her on finding exercise she can do at least for 30 minutes every day. That's weight bearing and builds muscle. Building muscle will also, of course, reduce her IGF-1, insulin-like growth factor 1, which takes away a growth factor, a growth signal, and using your muscles is one way to do that. I'm also concerned about her early insulin resistance because remember that breast cancer cells in particular have more receptors for insulin on their surface and more receptors for GLUT4. And so we really want a low glycemic diet. She needs to understand what that is, maybe work with a nutritionist, which I can see she already is, make sure that's well understood and she's compliant. But, you know, you could think about metformin for a patient like this because metformin is not only improves insulin sensitivity, but it also has an impact on breast cancer. And it's an off-label use of metformin, but it's powerful. But if we didn't want to give her a drug, which, you know, people who are poor methylators can't really take metformin, so they get nauseous on it. So we could think about berberine, which has similar activity to metformin in terms of glucose insulin sensitivity. And it also has so many anti-tumor properties that it also sort of fits this niche of a multitasker. So you'd want to monitor fasting insulin, fasting glucose, and hemoglobin A1C and insulin like growth factor 1 in a patient like this and get her to move her muscles because where does insulin sensitivity happen? In the muscle. So if you're sedentary, then because you've had a hip surgery, you're going to have less insulin sensitivity. So she needs to find a way to be active for the rest of her life. So those things, top of mind. The other thing is in the treatment plan, I liked the treatment plan that Dr. Sood gave us, but I think these things need more attention. So I like to do with patients like this some kind of a cyclic cytotoxic therapy. So one way you can do that orally is to alternate artemisinin 1 week and then cytotoxic herbs the second week. Do that, like you could do that right now for 4 weeks. you know, 1 week on, 1 week off, 1 week on, 1 week off of each of these. And then do it over the course of a year, maybe do it 3 times or 4 times for a 2 week or 1 month block of time. And I'll often have patients concurrently do hyperbaric oxygen therapy or high dose IV vitamin C, something else that will increase cytotoxicity and stress the tumor cells, and I'd have them fast or do intermittent fasting during a period like that. I have all my patients do intermittent fasting anyway at night, 8 hours of eating, 16 hours of fasting, really dramatically stresses tumor cells, improves insulin sensitivity and immunity. So simple thing to do that's not another pill. So I'll often have patients like this with a high risk of recurrence. Even though she's NED right now, she has a high risk of recurrence. So I like to think about doing other naturopathic therapies like oral low-dose naltrexone, 4.5 milligrams at bedtime, reduces proliferation, quite safe to do long-term, cannot be done if you're on opioid pain medications. If things like high-dose IV vitamin C, IV artesunate, IV curcumin are available, think about them. I like to do IV mistletoe or sub-Q mistletoe. And you can think of a patient like this, like 2 months of that kind of IV therapy once or twice a year. And we do these cytotoxic therapies to scavenge microscopic tumor cells. So, because with oral herbs, you just can't get these super high doses you can get IV. So you can think about that for patients who can afford it and have access to it. We'd also want to measure her ceruloplasmin and serum copper and zinc and see if she has high levels of copper and ceruloplasmin. Then we might think about oral copper chelation to stop angiogenesis. There is a clinical pearl lecture on that also, on oral copper chelation with tetrathiomolybdate. I think about patients like this with they've had a good response to their conventional oncology treatment, but they still have a high risk of recurrence because when they know they have resistant microscopic cells and stem cells that can come back. So we need something more than a maintenance long-term plan. But the foundation nutrients that I like to put in, you'll all recognize this, just kind of some tweaks of Dr. Sood's treatment plan. I like the ProThriver Wellness Multi from Integrative Therapeutics. It was designed by Lise Alschuler, who is a naturopathic oncologist who is also a breast cancer survivor. She designed this multi. It's copper-free, iron-free, boron-free. It's also tocopherol-free, and it replaces tocopherols with tocotrienols, which have incredible anti-tumor and protective activity. I was just at a conference and heard Barry Tan lecture on tocotrienols and cancer, and he's actually going to present his lecture, his research at ASCO this year. I was blown out by his research. I'm going to do my next clinical pearl on Barry Tan's research on tocotrienols because I was so impressed by him and by it. So tocotrienols are very important. I'm putting them into a lot of treatment plans. And you can't take them concurrently with tocopherol. And it's the delta fraction tocotrienol. So I'm going to talk about that in our next clinical pearl because I think it's so important. There's this new research. So I like this multi for all those reasons. We, of course, always put vitamin D in our protocols and optimize serum levels. This vitamin D has some K in it, which for a patient with osteopenia and bone metastasis is important. Of course, the omega-3s, the magnesium, and the probiotics are in the foundation nutrients. And then our targeted nutrients, like the idea of berberine for this patient for the glycemic control as well as its anti-tumor activity, the curcumin, EGCG, Broccoprotect I like to put in for the sulforaphanes, which promote detoxification, especially of estrogens. Remember, the berberine and the sulforaphanes also stop deconjugation of estrogen in the gut so that you don't get recirculation of your excreted estrogens that's excreted through the bile, so that it actually gets excreted in the stool and doesn't recirculate. So I like berberine for that reason. Also, the sulforaphanes do that. And then pinocchiol is one of my favorite phytochemicals from Chinese magnolia bark, which is so active against breast cancer. Lots of studies. There is a clinical pearl lecture on Honokiol. I like to use polysaccharides. So QOL Labs has a nice product called AHCC, or you could use something like the Clinical Synergy Mycoceutics Immune Powder, which is a combination of Chinese mushrooms high in these polysaccharides. And the research on CoQ10 and breast cancer is pretty compelling. Designs for Health QVEL is a nice, highly absorbable, fat-soluble CoQ10, 200 milligrams, a nice daily dose. For a patient like this, if she could afford it to get 98% pure resveratrol powder and take 3 to 5 grams a day, that's so powerful. And so it's very expensive, though. And then when somebody has metastatic disease, I also put in the modified citrus pectin because it's also so powerful in arresting metastatic progression. And you can monitor galectin 3 in the blood to see someone's need for modified citrus pectin. Galectin 3 is also linked to cardiovascular risk. And then I just mentioned the Mycoceutics Mushroom Immune Max powder, very high quality powder of Chinese mushrooms. I don't think there's a lot of really high quality powders on the market. This is a product from Clinical Synergy, which is the company founded by Dr. Isaac Elias, a friend and colleague of mine who is also does integrative oncology and is an amazing researcher and really brilliant herbalist. So I like his mushroom powder quite a lot. And then at bedtime, we'll use the melatonin. Lots of studies on melatonin and breast cancer. And we give it at bedtime because that's where the time of day where the body naturally produces it. And a lot of people think it's in their protocol for sleep, but you have to emphasize to them it's in there for the cancer, because if people are sleeping well, they'll stop taking their melatonin because they think they don't need it. Because a lot of educated patients are aware it's used for sleep. Then most of these patients are magnesium deficient, so I'll put more magnesium in. It also helps you be calm at night and have good sleep. And I like to put in extra Honokiol, and it is a sedative. Honokiol is also used for stress and sleep and sedation. It's very relaxing. Some people are so sensitive to Honokiol that they feel sleepy in the daytime with it. So then I'll just have them take it at dinner and at bedtime. And if you give IV Honokiol, people fall asleep as soon as it goes into their blood. It's very sedating. So it's nice for the stress modulation. So those are kind of the capsules and the powders. And then I like to make tumor control formulas. And in this case, we'd do that and put some bone support in there. And then I like to put adaptogens into my formulas as well. So I've given you an example of a Chinese herb formula that I would mix in my clinic. And, you know, if any of you want your patients to have these, we can mix them for your patients and have them sent. So if you like the idea of doing this and can't do it yourself, we're happy to help you do something like this with your patient. And quite a lot of these herbs are discussed in the course. And also there's a couple of case studies in the latter modules of the course, which look at formulas like this. So we have at the top, we have this anti-mastoplasia formula made by Golden Lotus, which is a really nice broad spectrum of anti-tumor and anti-inflammatory herbs, a lot of scutellaria in that formula. Astragalus, which of course is both anti-tumor and supports the bone marrow. Poya Fu Ling is another polysaccharide-rich Chinese mushroom. Romania for the bones, of a medium for the bones, nettle root for the bones. Nettle root's an aromatase inhibitor also. Oldenlandia is, and scutellaria, both scutellarias are very potent anti-inflammatory, anti-tumor botanicals used in most anti-tumor formulas in modern oncology in China today. Red sage extract, Chinese dunshan, has not only anti-tumor, antioxidant properties, but also really decreases fibrosis and hypercoagulation, which is common in patients like this, especially with that high CRP. Polygonatum also is a wonderful anti-tumor apoptosis promoting botanical. Ashwagandha is in there not only for its anti-tumor activity, but for its stress modulation, adaptogenic. green tea, both for the bone as well as for its anti-tumor activity. Schizandra has anti-tumor activity, but also it's incredibly calming and good for stress because it's a yin tonic. And tangerine peel, Chen Pi, is in there because it helps digest all these herbs, but it also has anti-tumor activity. So I love botanicals because they're all multitaskers. And I give about 2 teaspoons a day of a formula like this. This can be taken daily. And then those cytotoxic herbs would just be taken intermittently, the way we use chemotherapy. And then, of course, we teach the Outsmart Cancer Diet to these patients. This patient, very important that she be low glycemic. I think bone broth is really nice. If this patient is not vegetarian or vegan, bone broth is very nice because you get a lot of minerals and glutamine, and it's very soothing. And, of course, I mentioned I teach all my patients intermittent fasting, and then I give them all a little reading list, and I have them all read my book because it's just a really easy way to start implementing and getting the main principles without too much heavy intellectual information. I like people to read Nasha Winter's book, Cancer is a Metabolic Disease, because it really explains the terrain and explains why low glycemic. Anti-Cancer, A New Way of Life is a book written long ago by David Servan-Schreiber, also a great chapter on low glycemic and lifestyle and environmental impacts on cancer risk and cancer protection. And I also have my patients read Kelly Turner's book, Radical Remission, because it's very inspiring and really just talks about patients who are the exceptional patients and the outliers, which is who we want all our patients to be. So that's kind of my approach to a case like this. We've done a similar case in this course too, so you can again look up breast cancer cases. And we're just about hitting the hour right now, so I'm going to pause and you can ask questions either about this case or any other questions you would like to ask. *7 to unmute yourself. Or you can use the chat box. Really? No questions? My God.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, this is Miriam.
Hi.
How are you? I wanted to ask about intermittent fasting if a patient has, like, adrenal issues.
Adrenal issues... You know, I think one of the most important things to do for people with adrenal issues is get them to regulate their body clock and their sleep and their timing of their eating so that their physiology gets more stable and their HPA axis gets more regulated. So I hear you, and I think you could have a patient do something like maybe have something that would maintain their blood sugar right before they go into their fasting period, like a high-fat, high-protein shake, like half a shake or something, or have some bone broth with some extra fat in it. And that would stabilize their blood sugar so they wouldn't get that cortisol spike, right? And so you could do something like that. You could have them take something like rhodiola or Siberian ginseng or some kind of nice adaptogenic formula or American ginseng to help support that. Or you could teach them that during that time when they're fasting to make that a healing window where they do some yoga, some slow yin yoga, or they meditate or visualize or do something relaxing, so that they associate fasting not with stress, but with healing, you know?
Right.
And you have to reframe it for them, you know? And,
okay,
you know, some
patients
can't do 16 hours. So what I say to patients is just eat dinner earlier and have your breakfast shake later and get 13 hours of no calories in. And most people can do that, you know? It's a little harder to do 16 hours, but almost anybody could do 13. So it depends who you're talking to, you know? And you just teach them how to do it, frame it in a way that it's a healing thing to do. And I really emphasize the pros of doing intermittent fasting which are, it switches on your immunity, it improves your insulin sensitivity, and it makes your body composition better in terms of more muscle, less fat. And it's not extreme. You know, anybody can do it. It's kind of normal not to eat after dinner. But in modern life, we have food and calories available to us 24/7, right? So we eat all the time. But that's not actually normal, you know? So it, part of our job is to model what causes health. Whether you have cancer or not, I think it's a good habit, you know?
I think I was thinking of intermittent fasting more of like a much smaller window of eating, the way that I had learned it in functional nutrition. And so when a client of mine said, oh, I wanted to do intermittent fasting, and I said, well, wait a minute, because you have to make sure that your adrenals are okay.
So
my recommendation is like not eating till 2 p.m. and then only eating till like 7 p.m. is
Our bio-clock, I think our bio-clock needs calories in the morning, you know, because you're hypoglycemic when you wake up. So it's, and also in Chinese medicine, the qi of the stomach comes in the morning. So, and I think most of my patients aren't doing hard labor with their muscles all day. They're sitting around thinking great thoughts. So, like with the most of us. So you don't need a lot of carbs or calories. You need some fat and protein. So we teach people, like, what's the diet for optimizing their clarity of mind, their lucidity, the stability of their blood sugar and their energy levels. Like, talk about all the positives of it so that people are motivated to get those prizes, you know, to get
I tell everyone about low glycemic, even people that don't have cancer. The thing is to actually get them to let go of those carbs. It's like they're so addicting.
But that's why I use a shake, because if you do a morning shake that's got enough fat and protein in it, and then you're not hungry, or you're not on that roller coaster of you know, getting hypoglycemic too soon, people love that. People love that. So I tell them, you could switch your physiology in 3 days if you just do this. Just humor me and try it, you know? And but I just wanted to say, if you didn't hear the lecture, I did a clinical pearl on the work of Walter Longo on fasting mimicking diets. And you can also go to Walter Longo's website where his published papers are. And he also wrote a book for lay people last year called The Longevity Diet, which explains this to the patient. And not in the context of cancer so much. I was just at a conference where he gave a new presentation on fasting mimicking diets and cancer physiology, which is pretty impressive. So if you're interested in intermittent fasting, following his work, I think is worthwhile.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And I love this course and everything that you're teaching. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay. Somebody's got their hand up. Stephanie, let me find your question. Hold on. So I don't see your question in the chat box.
Oh, hiya. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, I can. Mm-hmm.
Hi, Nalini. Good evening.
Hi.
Yeah, I did send two questions across in a chat box, so I thought maybe I'll just
bubble up. I didn't see them. Just go ahead and ask them.
Okay, thank you for having me. The two questions I had, one was about silymarin and milk thistle. I love that as well, but I was just wondering if you had a thought around which form of it would be most effective, and should we consider its bioavailability?
Well, these are phytochemicals that are always the same. So what I look for is a milk thistle that has a high percentage of the phytochemicals in it.
So would you say like a tincture, like a an extract would be?
You can use a tincture or a powder. You just want a company that labels it to tell, or, you know, or even a capsule that tells you that they've assayed it for those phytochemicals.
Right. Okay, great. That's helpful. And the other question was about glutamine. Glutamine. I think I wasn't sure whether I understood it correctly, because I've seen in some, in some contexts that glutamine could be a metabolic source to some tumor cells.
Yes, we've had a whole lecture on that
do. So I'll just briefly answer your question, but there's a whole clinical pearl on that controversy. And the short answer is that glutamine is the most ubiquitous amino acid in the body. If a cancer cell wants glutamine, it's everywhere. So we're not going to ever restrict a cancer cell's access to glutamine. And so Paul Anderson, who is a naturopathic oncologist that I respect immensely, wrote an opinion paper on that. And that is also posted in our resources. And, but the, his main idea is it's, you can't ever restrict glutamine from a cancer cell. And there, it is true that some cancer cells shift from glycolysis to glutaminolysis and use glutamine for fuel, but that's not about whether glutamine is available or not.
Right. No, thank you. I'll look out for it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. What time is it in Singapore?
It's nice and early. It's 10:30 a.m. No, it's great. And I love the timing. So thank you for having me. And I love your course, and I appreciate all the support that you give us.
You're most welcome. It's greatly fulfilling to me.
All right, I'll get off. I'll unmute myself.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Anybody else? All right, everybody. Thank you so much. There was a lot of people from this call from all over the place. I hope you got value out of it. If there's particular questions you have, remember you can submit them ahead of time. If you have a case, there's a form on which you're required to submit your case that's on the Ground Rounds page. And I need to have those courses, those cases and questions you want reviewed at least 2 weeks before our next call. So make sure you look at the schedule and get those in so that you can have the support that you need and want. I'll see you all next time. Thank you.